Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Yesterday, one of the topics came up was prototype Surabhi. And when discussing the prototype Surabhi, another topic came up. It was either yesterday or day before. And that was Mother Jashoda and Devaki both giving birth to Krishna. That was yesterday? So here's the, so that question came up some time ago. Somebody somewhere asked. So I wrote the following in the response. Question. We always hear that Krishna was born in the prison house of Kamsa as the son of Vasudeva and Devaki. However, mention is occasionally made of Krishna being directly born from the womb of Yashoda. Where is the scriptural reference which states that Krishna was one of two children, twins, born of Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj? There's two commentaries. One is Rupa Goswami Lagu Bhagavatamrita, and you don't need to write this down. Your husband has the text. You can just get a copy. This is his commentary to 10.3.53. So 10.2 is prayers by the demigods, chapter 2. Chapter 3, Krishna takes birth. So it's chapter 3, towards the end. Exhausted by the labor of childbirth, Yashoda was overwhelmed with sleep and unable to understand what kind of child had been born to her. 10.3.53. And Rupa Goswami's commentary is, Yashoda, like Devaki, looking at the features of Krishna, could understand that he was the Supreme Lord. Param. But Yashoda did not understand that she had given birth to a girl child also, and that Vasudeva had in front of her taken the girl and exchanged his son and left. She did not know about the exchange. Na tad veda. Another version, so there's apparently some variations amongst Srimad Bhagavatam sources, says na tal lingam instead of na tad veda. In that case, the meaning is, quote, she did not know about the indications. That's lingam. The birth of the girl and Vasudeva exchanging the children. Lingam means indication or inference, according to the dictionary, Vishvakosh. The reason she did not understand is given. She was exhausted. In Adi Purana, that's a celebrated text that we refer to a lot. Krishna says, what he said, you know, one who claims to be my devotee is not my devotee. That Adi Purana is that source. And Adi Purana is clearly said by Narada, Nanda Gopa Grihe Putro Yashoda Garba Sambhava. Meaning, a son was born from the womb of Yashoda in the house of Nanda. Adi Purana, scriptural reference. It is said elsewhere that Krishna was Yashoda's son, and we should accept the direct meaning of such statements. Here's 10.5.1. Gives the Sanskrit. Nandas Tvatmaja Upane Jata Hlado Maha Mana. Translation. Nanda Maharaj was naturally very magnanimous And when Lord Sri Krishna appeared as his son, he was overwhelmed by jubilation. And then chapter 9 of Canto 10, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, the son of Mother Yashoda, is accessible to devotees engaged in spontaneous loving service, but he is not as easily accessible to mental speculators, those striving for self-realization by severe austerities and penances, or to those who consider the body the same as the self. And the conclusion of his commentary is coming up. However, when Devaki spoke to Kamsa, she was trying to hide the fact of her son's birth by saying the eighth child was a daughter. It cannot be taken literally. And then Canto 10, Chapter 4, Shukadev continued, piteously embracing her daughter and crying, Devaki begged Kamsa for the child, but he was so cruel that he chastised her and forcibly snatched the child from her hands. Question. Why did Shukadev not state the birth of Krishna from Yashoda directly? Answer. One should accept it as the Lord's intention. Quote, I will appear in the house of both Nanda and Vasudev. I will, however, remain only in Nanda's house with one form. If I have two forms, Kamsa will know that I've taken birth and will persecute both sets of parents. You, Shukadev, should recite my story so that the secret is not revealed. So Rupa Goswami knows Krishna's intention. He can read his mind. Pretty good, huh? This is the intention of the Lord, accepting the Lord's desire. The author wrote the work accordingly. Api, in a previous text, indicates that Krishna, being Yashoda's son, was kept covered. And on the same verse, that's 10.3.53, Yashoda was exhausted, etc. The fact that Krishna was also born of Yashoda is not very well known. Because Yashoda and Devaki were friends, Yashoda gave her fame to Devaki and allowed Devaki to become famous as the mother of Krishna. The name of Yashoda means to give. The dati, fame, Yasho. However, the name Devaki is also another name of Mother Yashoda, as stated in the Brihad Vishnu Purana, gives the Sanskrit. The wife, translation, the wife of Nanda, not the wife of Vasudev, the wife of Nanda had two names, Yashoda, and also Devaki. Therefore, it was natural that she, the wife of Nanda, developed friendship with Devaki, the wife of Vasudev. One of Vasudev's names is Shauri. End of translation from Brihat Vishnu Purana. This is also in accordance with Vaishnava Toshini, Ananda Vrindavan Champu, and Brihat Bhagavatamrita. Now, Vaishnava Toshini is Jiva Goswami's commentary on the 10th canto. And Ananda Vrindavan Champu is another Vaishnava literature, Jiva Goswami's, I believe. And then Brihat Bhagavatamrita is Sanatana Goswami's literature. So they're concluding the same thing. There's a scriptural reference to say the fact that Krishna was born in Yashoda is not very well known. So we don't normally, especially to public audiences, don't go around and say, hey, guess what? I heard this in a Bhagavatam class. Guess what? We don't go there. But it's part of the mystery of Krishna's pastimes that our acharyas are revealing. So now we're going to be discussing the next verse from chapter 14. And it's a nice verse. Text 38. 10:14:38. The first word in the Sanskrit is jananta. Jananta is translated word for word. Persons who think that they are aware of your unlimited potency. Eva janantu. Let them think like that. Translation. There are people who say, I know everything about Krishna. Let them think that way. As far as I am concerned, I do not wish to speak very much about this matter. Oh, my Lord, let me say this much. As far as your opulences are concerned, they are all beyond the reach of my mind, body, and words. Which connects with, so this is the concluding section. It started, chapter 13 started with his wanting to know the limit of his opulences, and his conclusion is, as far as your opulences are concerned, they are all beyond the reach of my mind, body, and words. So, what's being said here is the nature of Bhagavan, Krishna, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, the nature of Bhagavan is he has unlimited and inconceivable opulences, two things. This is Jiva Goswami's Bhagavat Sandarbha. Unlimited and inconceivable opulences. And the reasoning goes, if he were to not have unlimited and inconceivable potencies, then he wouldn't be God. He has to. Bhagavan, God, the Supreme, the source of everything, has to. And then he explains, as soon as that is accepted, then it's very easy to understand Krishna because it's just his unlimited and inconceivable potencies. So if one hasn't accepted that in their heart, then it becomes very troubling when we hear pastimes that are arising from his unlimited and inconceivable potencies. Come on. You know, the doubt. You know, and the atheists, of course, say what they say, and the materialists say what they say, and the neophyte devotees may not express it, but there's a doubt inside. So now we're getting this authoritative statement from the most learned person in the universe, who saw the unlimitedness of Krishna's opulences and is addressing those people who say, I know everything about Krishna. Now, maybe you haven't met people that say that. I've met people that say that. And on book distribution, people born in India often will say that. No, I know all about Krishna. And the BBT purport is really short. It just says, this translation is quoted in Srila Prabhupada's Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila, chapter 21, text 27. And what it says there, that purport, is two sentences. That's Prabhupada's purport. And it just says, the statement was made in conjunction with the Brahma Vimohan Lila, etc. So here's Vishwanath, his commentary. O Brahma, what you have said is absolutely true. There is no one else in this universe who can explain about my form, my Braja devotees, my pastimes, and my bhakti in front of me. It means not like you can, but no one can. There's no one. He can, but no one can. those his thoughts. Fearing that the Lord would request him to speak further, Brahma then speaks with shame, fear, and repentance. Quote, I am in that category. I am Te, greatest fool. I am that greatest. I'm in that category of foolish people. Krishna. Oh, Brahma. Then why have you spoken till now? Brahma. Speaking too much in your presence will show my foolishness. Krishna. Oh, Brahma. Please, speak the truth. You're trying to cheat me with your words. Brahma. My mind cannot grasp your powers by meditation. My eyes cannot grasp your form. My words cannot describe you. As I said previously, who can describe your heaps of good qualities? I cannot grasp the power of your mind with my senses. I cannot understand what is in your mind. Then he makes reference to, there's a bunch of these, text number 2 of this whole section, chapter 14. Text 2. I cannot understand anything about your body or any of your words, which are the Vedas. Although he's the receiver of the Vedas, and
this is chapter 13. That 14 will begin from this.
Okay. Ah, fantastic. Okay. Here's the translation for text 2. 10:14:2. My dear Lord, neither I nor anyone else can estimate the potency of this transcendental body of yours, which has shown such mercy to me and which appears just to fulfill the desires of your pure devotees. Although my mind is completely withdrawn from material affairs, I cannot understand your personal form. How then could I possibly understand the happiness you experience within yourself? So he continues. Thus, when you are standing before me silently, I cannot even speak a word. Thus, I say in front of you, I am really insignificant. And Jiva Goswami, his commentary, says, in a general way, in verse 2, Brahma declared that inconceivability of Krishna's greatness. Then in verse 9, he showed that Krishna's Swarup Shakti, Maya Shakti, and his Swarup were inconceivable. So let's go to text 9 and read the translation of text 9. My Lord, just see my uncivilized impudence. To test your power, I tried to extend my illusory potency to cover you, the unlimited and primeval supersoul who bewilder even the masters of illusion. What am I compared to you? I am just a small spark in the presence of a great fire. In verse 31, and that's, you know, little in this same section, the Braja Prema section, in text 31, he showed that the prema of the people of Braja was inconceivable. 31. Oh, Almighty Lord, how greatly fortunate are the cows and ladies of Vrindavan, the nectar of whose breast milk you have happily drunk to your full satisfaction, taking the form of their calves and children. All the Vedic sacrifices performed from time immemorial up to the present day have not given you as much satisfaction. So that's 31. He showed that the prema of the people of Braj was inconceivable. And then text 35, this is now still Jiva Goswami's commentary. In text 35 and 37, Brahma showed that Krishna's mercy and pastimes are inconceivable. So here's 35 and then 37. My mind becomes bewildered just trying to think of what reward other than you could be found anywhere. You are the embodiment of all benedictions which you bestow upon these residents of the cowherd community of Vrindavan. You have already arranged to give yourself to Putana and her family members in exchange for her disguising herself as a devotee. So what is left for you to give these devotees of Vrindavan, whose homes, wealth, friends, dear relations, bodies, children, and very lives and hearts are all dedicated to you? And 37, now that's the previous verse because we're on 38. My dear master, although you have nothing to do with material existence, you come to this earth and imitate material life just to expand the varieties of ecstatic enjoyment of your surrendered devotees. So continuing with his commentary. Now he abandons further definitions and begins his conclusion by indicating his desired goal. What's that? O Lord, with unlimited variegated powers, even your glory stated in the Vedas cannot be understood by me. Even though I see this form before me, it cannot be perceived by the body, such as the material eye, the organ of the body, or described by material words. Therefore, I begin simply by praying. So this is prayers. That is what I will do now. And here's Sanatana Goswami's commentary, and we're done. Starting in 10.14.3. What's that verse? Jnane prayasam udapasya namante eva. Celebrated verse. Brahma has explained that jnana is insignificant and bhakti is great. He now summarizes this. Let those who think they know the glory of your bhakti think that they are very learned, practicing jnana. Let them perfect it. This is said with irony. What more can be said about the insignificance of jnana and the greatness of bhakti? O Lord, with unlimited various powers, your greatness cannot be approached by writing ability with the body, by descriptions using words, or by thinking with the mind. Since your greatness is continuous and inconceivable, all else is approachable. All else is approachable. So that which is within this world is approachable, and that which is transcendental is not. First, Brahma describes the body of the Lord by praises. Then he raises various doubts. Now he summarizes with conviction a description of the greatness of bhakti. O Lord, who reveals excellently great, reveals excellently great beauty. The greatness of your body is beyond my understanding. The greatness of your mind, words, and body are beyond my understanding. Like you, your mind is deeper than a million oceans. Your single body is the unlimitedly deep Vedas, being limited and unlimited simultaneously. I can understand the meaning of your words, measured and abundant, uttered to your friends. Conclusion. Summarizing the greatness of Vraja by praising the Lord in front of him, he mocks the fools who think they know. O Lord of Gokula, the glory of the people of Vraja is beyond my, and even beyond your, body, mind, and words. Those who think they know are fools, worthy of mockery. and final Kramasamdarbha, that's Jiva Goswami's entire 12 cantos verse by verse, or most of the verses. It's really short. Let the people who think they know think in that way. What more can be said, O Lord? Your powers are not accessible by my mind, eyes, or words. Having showed that Krishna's mercy and pastimes are inconceivable, he now abandons further definitions and begins his conclusion by indicating his desired goal. So that's next, text 39. The Bhagavatam is commentary on Vedanta Sutra. Yes? Bhagavatam is commentary on Vedanta Sutra, right, Keshava? Mm-hmm. Madhava? You don't know? Have you heard it before? The Vedas are summarized in Vedanta Sutra. And Bhagavatam is a commentary on Vedanta Sutra. You've heard that before? Okay, now you have. Let's say it again. There's like the Vedas are vast, and then to summarize the Vedas, Vyasadeva compiled Vedanta Sutra. Little codes, sutras means codes. And very difficult to understand. So to understand them, he explains them in Srimad Bhagavatam. It's a commentary on that which is the summary of all the Vedas. So the absolute truth is the search of Vedanta. And Krishna is that absolute truth from which everything comes. So this chapter 13, chapter 14 is an expansion on that statement. The absolute truth is that which is the source of everything. And that everything is Krishna. Now, a question came to me yesterday, a written question from somebody. What's the meaning of this term Godhead? Supreme Personality of Godhead. Like, the person asking the question was, they were not comfortable with the term. You know, Prabhupada would sometimes coin terms that were just not commonly used. But it was for a purpose. Like, here's a couple of examples. Bhakti, by translators, is the connotation of bhakti is the sentimental part. The love. And it's like the affective element of the mind is that. It's for sentimental people. The bhakti is for sentimental people. But Prabhupada, you know, consistently it's devotional service. Bhakti. Or even devotion, but like devotional service. And it fits the definition of bhakti. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam. Bhakti Ruchate. So devotional service. Or another one of his phrases is fruitive activities. Karma is commonly translated as activity or the reaction to activity. But he used the term consistently, fruitive activities. Fruitive activities. Fruitive activities. So it carries a connotation. People that do something because they want something. So, you know, karma has that component, so it's nothing wrong with saying fruitive activities, but it makes it really clear. That's a binding force, people wanting to be the enjoyers of the fruits of their work. And there's other examples. So what, another, a third is Godhead. And the person specifically wanted to know what's the difference between Godhead and Brahman. So Godhead, maybe if you have somebody questioning you in the future about what's that one all about. It's an additional nomenclature that helps define the Supreme Person. Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, Godhead, is he coined the phrase. It's not... There's Fountainhead. And Fountainhead, dictionary definition, is that was the source of something. The Fountainhead. So the dictionary definition is that the president or the head of state is the fountainhead for something or other. So it's like a common use of the term fountainhead. So Prabhupada took, this is my sense, he took the fountainhead term and used Godhead. Because supreme person, even more personality of Godhead, that which is the source of everything. Not just source of something, but the source of everything. That's God. So instead of saying God, Godhead. It carries the connotation of the absolute truth, which is the source of everything. And the source of everything is the Supreme Person. So put the two together. Supreme Person, Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then the other question was, What's the meaning of Brahman? So if you're an impersonalist, we're not. But if those who are impersonalists, Brahman is the source of everything. In fact, there's nothing else but Brahman. And everything is from Brahman. And so just say Brahman. That was this person's, studied opinion. So he's like uncomfortable with the Godhead term. So what's the difference between Godhead and Brahman? Brahman is, what does it mean? It means different things. But that which is beyond temporary, or that which is eternally existing, like the sat feature of the absolute truth. It's part of the absolute truth, but it's not the totality of the absolute truth, that from which everything comes, because two verses that are very familiar for devotees, that is the verse that says from the Bhagavatam, the non-dual truth, Advayam Tattva, non-dual truth, has these three features, Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan, or Sat, Chit, and Ananda. And so Brahman is a feature of the absolute truth, but it's not the absolute truth. And in fact, that Brahman feature rests upon the personal feature. That's Bhagavad Gita. Brahmano hi pratishtha aham. Pratishtha is a nice word. In short, it means the basis and support of. And it's not just like, the floor is supporting us. Underneath the floor there's some beams, and underneath the beams there's a foundation, and underneath the foundation is the earth, so the earth is supporting us. But it's not just a mechanical or material meaning of support. It's an existential meaning or an ontological meaning. That is, Krishna is the basis of everything, as well as the basis of Brahman. So things may rest in Brahman, but Krishna is the basis of Brahman. He's the rest for Brahman. Everything rests in him. He's the personal feature. Is the personal feature of the absolute truth is the basis of everything, and thus Godhead, Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Brahman means, in simple terms, that which is beyond the temporary, that which is eternally existing, Sat, or Brahman. That's the direct meaning. So this section, Brahma's prayers, this is the wrap-up of his prayers, text 38, goes for two more verses. But he's expanding the meaning of Vedanta. The absolute truth is that which is the source of everything, and that which is the source of everything is a person. That's what the Bhagavatam explains from that verse of Vedanta Sutra. And the whole of the Vedanta Sutras say it too. But many persons don't get it for different reasons. One of the big reasons is scholarship won't do it. That's a good reason. But, you know, another is a predisposition. What's the predisposition? Well, you know, I want to be God. So I just read Aham Brahmasmi. Look, I'm God. What's God? Well, it's the source of everything. I'm the source of everything. Aham Brahmasmi. I beg your pardon, sir. So the Bhagavatam is expanding the meaning of Vedanta Sutra. Brahma's having received all the Vedas is saying, I don't understand the Vedas, and then he's proceeding to describe the Vedas, the conclusion of the Vedas, but saying in very humble terms, I better not speak anything because I'll show my foolishness. And others may say that that's okay. I declare, I can't understand. I can't understand your all these parts. Your form, your words, your way of speaking with the Brijbasis, the meaning of the Vedas is beyond me. So I better not say anything more. Your potencies, so back to the chapter 13 question, your potencies are unlimited and inconceivable. You're Bhagavan. Someone that's limited and inconceivable, that's not Bhagavan. They may have potencies. Brahma says, I have potencies. But it's like, you know, a spark to a fire. Insignificant. Okay, so let's see if there's some discussion. 8:17. Hey, the bell rang. 8:17. Really? Okay. We're glad to have you with us. Yeah.
Guru Maharaj, one technical question.
Yeah.
Regarding Krishna born as son of Mother Yashoda, in that when you were reading, why Shukadeva Goswami kept it as a secret? You know that part?
I remember, yeah.
But why does Krishna say to Shukadeva Goswami, or that is Jiva Goswami's commentary, keep it as a secret, I don't want Kamsa to know. But Shukadeva Goswami told it after everything has happened, right?
Yeah.
So why should that be kept as a secret?
For Krishna's purposes.
It's for
he
the
wanted
readers
to churn his pastimes and have Kamsa send demons and so forth. It was his pastime. Why would he do it? Because it's his pastime. And then later he reveals. It's quite okay. Isn't that not okay?
No, I was thinking that all of those have already happened when Shukadeva Goswami spoke this. Is it not? Krishna has already appeared.
Yes. But he's speaking as if it's present tense, although it was, you know, after the fact. He's speaking to Maharaj Parikshit, which is after the fact. Kamsa is long gone. But he's speaking as if it's in the present.
So Krishna spoke to, or the understanding is before. Don't say anything at that point.
Yes, yes, okay. Yes. Okay. Your question is a good question.
Yes. And then one practical question.
Yeah.
when we hear the Brahma's prayers, and
the chronology of everything within the Bhagavatam can be perplexing. It's for sure. And, you know, we're pointing out one of them, and there's others. And Acharya's pointed out, is speaking of something that didn't happen yet, and they're already saying it. Like the gopis speaking of Krishna, although they don't know he's the personality of Godhead, they're speaking of Krishna in certain ways. But yet, you know, the, so, he, before he kills Keshi, they call him Keshi Sudana. That's contradictory, isn't it? You know, they could have said, anyway, so that there's chronological apparent contradictions, and it's a little tricky to, you know. You're pointing out another one. There's other ones. So the chronology of the narration is puzzling sometimes. Okay.
So, second question is, you know, today's verse, Brahma's prayers, where Brahma is saying that, you know, people may say that Krishna, you know, they know you, but I would say this, that, you know, all your potencies and everything is unlimited, and there is, I am still not able to understand, or I don't understand.
Yes, that's what he's saying.
Yes. So when Lord Brahma says that, I'm thinking about, you know, the position of me. There is absolutely no possibility that to understand, but I am connecting that with the eighth shloka that Brahma prays, Tate Nukampam Sushamikshamano, where he says that one who earnestly awaits for the mercy of the Lord, all the while tolerating the past
results of one's misdeeds,
reactions they have done, and paying obeisances with the mind, body, and words. But that shloka only says that liberation is already, you know, attained. Okay. But can I say that, or can I think that it is the sankalpa in which the devotee approaches the Lord that Krishna prema can be attained?
Yes.
That we can.
Your question is exactly the discussion between Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Lord Chaitanya. He said, I object. He shouldn't have said mukti. He should have said bhakti. And Lord Chaitanya smiled and said, this is very interesting, because before you hated the word bhakti, now you're hating the word mukti. But it's a correct way to address him, mukti pade, because there's only one who can deliver mukti. And yes, he gives bhakti. But so your question specifically, is this the meditation or the sankalpa of the devotee that he'll give liberation? For a devotee, liberation means, this is, you know, Canto 2, Chapter 9, Swaropena Vyavastati. It's achieving one's spiritual form. That is the meaning of mukti. The lesser meaning is not the meaning of mukti. The mukti pade, the giver of one's sorup, and the activities in one's spiritual form, which is bhakti. Although it's using the word mukti.
Hey, Krishna Maharaj.
I'm ready.
I have two questions. My first question is, who told Kamsa that Krishna was already born in Vrindavan?
Narada.
And why did Narada tell Krishna, tell Kamsa that Krishna was already born?
Because he wanted to accelerate the pastime of Krishna coming for his purpose to kill the demons on earth. As long as he's staying in Vrindavan, he's not going to do his business of killing the demons on earth. So he knew what Kamsa would do. Kamsa would go try to kill Krishna, which is good. Then the next thing, he went to Krishna. After leaving Kamsa, He went to go see Krishna. Did you know that part, right?
Yeah, he went to go see Krishna. Yeah.
And what did he say to?
I don't know what he said, but I know he went to see.
Okay,
Krishna.
he went to Krishna and said. He didn't say, "Hey, Krishna, you're supposed to kill demons on earth." He didn't do that. You're messing up. You didn't read your script properly. He didn't say that. He said, "I long to see the day when you'll go to Mathura and free Vasudeva and Devaki from the prison of Kamsa. I long to see that day when those suffering, your parents, are no longer in that difficult situation. And after that, I long to see the day when all the demons on earth for which you appeared in this world will be annihilated and all the devotees will be free from the harassment. I long to see the day." And Krishna said, "I'll go tomorrow." He was, being like, serving as an intelligence agent. You know that term, right? Like a spy.
Yeah.
So he knew stuff that other people didn't know. So he's like letting the cat out of the bag and saying, "Kamsa, Krishna, let's accelerate your pastimes of killing the demons." And, especially this guy Kamsa. Because to liberate Vasudeva and Devaki, that had to happen. Pretty good, huh? Narada's clever. You have something online? No?
The question is by Vishalaksha Prabhu. Vishalaksha Prabhu. Acharya is saying that Lord Krishna is son of Nanda and Vasudeva as well. Such inconceivable truths are directly spoken by Lord to them or saying from parampara or with faith speaking to us.
I didn't understand. Did you understand?
Yeah. The question is, Acharyas are saying that
yes.
Lord Krishna is son of Nanda and Vasudeva as well.
Yes.
Such inconceivable truths are directly spoken by Lord to them or saying from parampara or with faith speaking to us.
So did it get revealed to them by the Lord directly? That's what the question is? Or some other way, like he... Well, they read scripture. And they can understand what scripture is saying because they have bhakti. And yes, it's all of the above. That is, when they read scripture, they understand things that we don't read when we see or understand when we see scripture. Things are revealed to them. That's also. Scripture is coming from the Supreme Lord and they understand what the Supreme Lord is saying. Unlike Brahma who's saying, "I don't understand." Okay?
The question is from Gopinath Prabhuji. How come even Krishna cannot describe his glories?
Well, Krishna can describe his glories, but he says others present before me cannot. And then there's another statement that the limit of Krishna's glories even Krishna cannot do because when he describes his glories, then his glories have expanded and so it's not doable, even for Krishna. But the statement, Gopinath, is others standing before me cannot describe my glories adequately. Next.
The question is from Satish Prabhu. I heard somewhere that our Swarup exists in spiritual world. Once we get liberated, we merge with that form. Is that
gosh.
True, Maharaj?
No. Next.
Next. Atika, or Adhika Mataji. Shri Radhika Mataji. Lord Brahma made a statement that even though his mind is completely withdrawn from material affairs, he cannot understand Krishna.
Right. So?
Is this detachment from material affairs referring to detachment devoid of bhakti? Because
yes,
I assume
yes,
that
that's
if...
what it means. It's just, it's neutrality, it's not spiritual connection. Detachment from the temporary doesn't mean connection with the eternal.
And
neutrality, just, you know, neutrality.
Yeah, and she is saying that because I assume that if one is detached from material affairs, Krishna will bestow understanding of him.
Well, it only when there's bhakti, it's not Krishna is obliged to do anything. Keep, carry on.
Yeah. Another question is from Radha Duti Mataji.
Yeah.
Hey Krishna Guru Maharaj, how come Kamsa sent all the demons to Gokul and Vrindavan to attack Krishna even before Narada Muni told him much later?
He had a hunch.
That's it, Guru Maharaj.
Okay.
I have one question. Guru Maharaj, Krishna never left Vrindavan, is what I heard.
That's
and,
correct.
But Krishna also went to Mathura and Hastinapur. So how to understand
Easy.
That?
Easy. You ready?
Yes, Guru Maharaj.
When he left Vrindavan, he left as Vasudev Krishna, and Swayam Bhagavan Krishna entered into the hearts of all the devotees. He never left Vrindavan. You got it? Should I say it again?
Yes, Guru Maharaj, please.
When he went on the chariot of Akrura, he entered the water. Right?
Yes.
Akrura took a bath, and then Krishna said, let's go, and he'll all stay in the chariot. And then what did Akrura saw? He saw Krishna, he saw Nantashesh and Vishnu. That's Vasudev Krishna, who got back in the chariot and went to. So where did the Swami Bhagavan Krishna go? He never.
So Hastinapur and Mathura, Vishnu was there, not.
Yeah. Not Swami Bhagavan Krishna, because that he's in Braja. He never, and never leaves Braja. Even when his pastimes are concluded, he's eternally residing there.
So, Guru Maharaj, is it okay to understand that right now our Vrindavan, the Prajavasis, Krishna is still residing in their hearts?
No. I mean, Swami Bhagavan Krishna is residing in the heart of those who have prema.
Prema.
And otherwise, it's Param Vishnu, Paramatma. He manifests that form and feature according to their regard for him. And not all people who have bodies born in Braja or reside in Braja from wherever they came have prema. So super souls residing in their heart. Is that all right?
Yes, Guru Maharaj, yes.
Okay, so next question. On that one?
No, I have two questions.
Okay.
One is out of question.
Out of?
Out of topic.
Off topic, sure.
Having pets at home.
So having what at home?
Pet.
Pet.
Yeah.
Animals.
Yes, animals.
Okay.
Will it have, reaction, karmic reaction?
No.
Can you explain? Yeah.
No. It doesn't help the modes of nature, but it doesn't have a karmic reaction. That's okay. That's not karmic reaction. Well, it's not a karmic mm-hmm. dynamic, depending upon what you feed mm-hmm. the pet. Mm-hmm. But it's not karma bound. Mm-hmm. It's guna bound. They're not clean. like our discussion about carpets yesterday. Mm-hmm. No, there are devotee families that have carpets. Mm-hmm. There are devotee families, some, that have pets. So, depending upon what you feed the pet, it's not karma-bound, because what's natural food for them is what's natural food for them. It's not human consumption, it's animal consumption. Anyway, it's more guna-related. They're not clean.
So, if they have the animals, then will it affect their spiritual life because it's not guna-bound, let's say, eventually?
It depends. You know, it depends on the person. It may be beneficial just they have a companion, a pet. I know some, I know one family that they keep a pet in their house. And, you know, it's not, they know it's not clean, but it's for the feelings of their children, blah, 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 blah. And so they made that decision and there's a pet in the house. And they know that it's not clean. And, you know, the pet doesn't know the difference between the altar and the kitchen and, you know, yeah, everything. So it's not that, you know, anyway, it's offensive to the deity. No, we know that in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Shivananda Sen kept a dog. And there's other examples, but you know, but in what way did he keep the dog? The dog was just tagging along and he fed the dog. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu fed him pulp from coconut. And it wasn't, so, keeping the pet in the house is different than, anyway. So there's examples in Chaitanya Charitamrita we read that elevated devotees had animals. I know somebody that it's their thing. They call it animal husbandry. They don't keep pets in the house. They have a fence and over there is a goat and over there is a this and over there is a that, and they like taking care of animals. It's like, you know, that's their thing. But they're not in the house. They're not exactly pets either. And it's not karma bound for them to do that. It's protection of animals. You know, that's Krishi Gorakshivanyajam.
So the animal is not suffering because, you know, right now we are all missing. We feel like suffering. The freedom is going away, but the animal is always staying at home. They won't feel that they are also, like, because of our happiness, we are keeping them inside. They won't feel that.
I don't know what they're feeling.
I used to hear that, you know, we all came back from Krishna Loka, but, you know, Krishna is missing our service. And then once we go back, you know, our position is waiting, our service is waiting for us to return. So, that.
So, what's your question?
My question is, can you speak about it something? Because that's what I heard, but I don't know what does it mean, you know.
Well, there's lots of sentimental ideas floating around, and there's service awaiting eternal. The position of the soul is eternal, and the service activity of the soul is eternal, but it's now covered. So it's not like there's a slot for us over there, and it's just like, come on, get back so you can fill that slot over there because Krishna's not happy because some service is needed. You're not doing it. It's not like that. Krishna's self-satisfied. But the opportunity is more within than, you know, somewhere else in the spiritual world. And the spiritual form, unlike this other idea that somebody was asking, it's within, but it's dormant. And it just, like what happened with Narada. When he left his body, instantly, simultaneously, his spiritual form manifested. And that form of Narada is a spiritual form, not a material form. So we have spiritual form. Svarupa, that's the meaning, is our spiritual form, Svarupa. And this Svarupa becomes awakened by bhakti practiced here and performed here. And then in that same spiritual form, we continue in the spiritual world. So is there service awaiting? Yeah, there's service now too. Service awaiting now in our spiritual form now. Okay? Yeah.
This question is from Manasi Ganga Mataji. Guru Maharaj, today I was reading Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, and there are pastimes where he breaks all the pots in the house, destroys all the groceries. Even Mother Sachi is afraid seeing this behavior. When Sachi Mata tells him, now we have nothing to eat, he gets her some gold coins to sell and buy the groceries. Even in Krishna's pastimes, we read about this restlessness displayed. It's very bewildering. Can you kindly explain the restless nature of the Lord?
Well, everything is within him. Say it negatively. Is there something that exists that's not within him? Say it positively. Everything that exists is within him. And when he does, it's Leela. And when somebody else does it, it's the modes of nature. Everything is within him. And he displays, you know, some of that everything in the form of pastimes. And there's fortunate persons like Mother Sachi who can take part in his pastimes. And they become bewildered. Rajabhumi, you've got always something. Just hearing, okay. Okay, thank you very much, Prabhupada Ki.